Great. Okay, welcome to our work session here for the Board of County Commissioners. We will just jump right in to our agenda. First item is an update presentation on VOCA grant funding.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Jamie Barzee, and I'm a victim witness coordinator at the in the Criminal Division of the Utah County Attorney's Office. Thank you for this opportunity to report on behalf of the VOCA grant, which funds my position with the county. VOCA, which stands for Victim of Crime Act Compensation and Assistance, requires that I report to Commission 2 times a year on the crime categories we deal with, the types of services we provide, and our program accomplishments. I'm pleased to report that we are compliant with all requirements of our VOCA grant. In accordance with 2 CFR 200.331, Utah Office for Victims of Crime completed a desk review and an on-site audit in February of this year. Utah Office for Victims of Crime examined Utah County's written policies and procedures, analyzed financial documentation for expenses billed to the grant during July, August, and September of 2019, and examined Utah County's federal reporting process. Any potential issues of noncompliance were categorized as major, significant, and minor. The audit of Utah County produced a single minor finding that we had overbilled travel costs during the first quarter of 2019 in the amount of $6.16, which is the equivalent of 11.41 miles. This minor finding was remedied by billing $6.16 less for travel expenses during the third quarter, as reported on the quarterly financial status report. Along with the financial status report, the subgrantee report, data report, and the quarterly success report were also submitted for the third quarter and were determined to be free of errors. We met or exceeded our grant goals during quarter three in the areas of making initial contact with new victims, attending meetings or court hearings with victims, informing and educating victims about the resources offered by the Utah Office for Victims of Crime, and providing the court and adult probation and parole with victim contact information. The areas where we fell short in meeting our quarterly goals included assisting victims with restitution issues and referring victims to other agencies better equipped to meet their needs. We currently have an exceptional intern from Utah Valley University, Sarah Blackwell, who started in our office on January 6th and since then has devoted hundreds of hours in providing packets of information to victims of new criminal cases received by our office. Additionally, because of the workload that was utterly impossible for three victim witness coordinators to manage, our office administration assigned Patty Rodriguez, a legal assistant in our office, to be part of the victim witness coordinator team. Patty began her new assignment on March 2nd, and her contributions and assistance have also been immeasurable. Finally, our office administration assigned restitution matters be handled by the legal assistants in the civil division, and we are hopeful that with their assistance, we will better be able to meet and surpass our goals in assisting victims with issues involving restitution. These invaluable additional assistants help Katie Fox, Chris Buckley, and me better focus our energies and efforts on facilitating communication between victims and prosecutors and in assisting victims as they struggle to navigate and understand the complicated criminal justice system. It is interesting to note that the top three crimes in Utah County involving victims include physical assault, domestic violence, and child sexual abuse or assault. Due to COVID-19 and mandates to work from home where possible, we continue to reach out to victims and are accessible through work cell phones, text messages, and email. The prosecutors continue to meet with victims via WebEx, Zoom, and phone conferences. We are emailing court WebEx invitations to victims who wish to attend hearings remotely. We are even scheduling practice WebEx meetings with victims to ensure that on the day of the hearing, they are equipped with the technology and skills necessary to successfully observe important court hearings. We are apprehensive about meeting our fourth quarter goals for attending in-person meetings and accompanying victims to court hearings, but continue to do the best we can to assist all victims of crime whose cases are received by the Utah County Attorney's Office. Do you have any questions?
I usually have the same question every year when you come up, or twice a year when you come up. What are the trends? What are the trends that you're seeing? Are we increasing, decreasing, plateauing? What do you see? Because it's been alleged that with this COVID-19 that we're probably going to see increases. And so I just want to ask you, you're right on the front lines with it. What do you see?
I am on the front lines. What we do see is a definite increase in the physical assaults and the domestic violence. There's not a lot of increase in the child crimes because we're fearful that they're not able to report. They're not attending schools. They're not going to religious facilities. They don't have other adults outside their home, and they're not able to report the abuse that they're possibly suffering inside a home. But we are seeing an increase of familial types of crimes, especially those involving domestic violence.
A question on that, and you may or may not know this statistic off the top of your head. Of those abuses of children, do we know what percentage of those reported cases come from a third party, like a school teacher or an outside entity?
I can't give you an actual statistic, but I know that there are a great number that are. Typically, child victims either delay their reporting. So they report at some point when they're safe to report, either a separation of the perpetrator from the home, or they're more approaching adulthood when they feel like they can comfortably talk about it. But when it is reported and the child is in fact still a child and it's fairly recent, it's typically from outside sources, such as a counselor or an ecclesiastical leader or even best friends or family members like grandmothers or aunts or something like that.
How much time do you equate on an average basis you put to every case? I mean, obviously there's going to be some that are a lot more extensive than others, and some were going to be less. But what's kind of an average time you spend with one individual?
That is about impossible to answer because, like you said, the squeaky wheel victims, so to speak, the ones that are really reaching out to us and continually asking for updates are the ones that get the attention. And unfortunately, I continually have victims who say, "You're not updating me, you're not updating me." And I say, "I have hundreds of cases. I need you to reach out to me if you want to receive updates on your case. I need you to reach out to me with questions," those kinds of things. And then those are the people. So it's like the top cream, right, is where all of our attention goes, simply because the needs are so great when you consider the number of crimes that include victims, how impossible it is for us to actually take care of the needs of every single crime victim. And it is a tragedy. We just do the best we can and put out the fires that come at us every single day based upon the victims who reach out to us and request updates and questions to be answered, those kinds of things. So, and it really does vary based upon the needs of the individual victims. Without question, the majority of our attention goes to victims of assault, sexual crimes, those kinds of things. We do very little with thefts of ownership items. We do very little with automobile types of crimes. So it's when the victims have a lot more loss emotionally, physically, and the abuse is very severe, though that's where we devote most of our attention and time, without question.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for this report. Okay, seeing no other questions, we'll move to our second work session item, which is to discuss the approving of an application for land and for recreation and public purposes with BLM for West Mountain ATV Track and Shooting Range.
My commissioners, Richard Nelson, Public Works. This is an application for the RPMP process through the BLM. This project actually started before I came to the county almost 12 years ago with the previous commissions and council and mayors of Payson City, along with some others that were involved. It's kind of gone through various stages along the way. About 2 years ago, there was a change in the local leadership of BLM, and we actually got a lot more favorable response from BLM at the Salt Lake office. They actually reached out and said, hey, we'd kind of like to revive this and see if we can make something happen. This area is actually located in on the south end of West Mountain, just above the Payson landfill. It's an area that is frequented by shooters and ATV motorcycle riders alike, often at the same time in the same location, which causes significant problems at times. In working through with BLM, there's a couple of things here that probably should be noted in this application. A portion of this property, a little over, well, about two-thirds of it, about 620 acres, would be leased through the RPMP process because of underlying mining claims that are held by the Staker and Parson companies. About 400 acres would be, on the application it says purchase, but it would be a patent that would be issued from BLM to the county. That's kind of the northern section of this project that would actually come into county ownership. It's also where the shooting range would be located, similar to what we did out on Lake Mountain. BLM does not have a provision in their rules to have a formal shooting range built on BLM-owned land. So what this project would do, it does a couple of different things. One is it builds a shooting range similar to what we have out on Lake Mountain that would have organized shooting lanes, benches, targets, that sort of thing. The berms around it, so it's a protected area. Hopefully the shooters would be well behaved and not bring the garbage that they bring out there now to shoot, and it would give an organized area for that to happen. The other part of the project would be a ATV motocross track and trail area, a track that could be used for competitions, for motocross events, things like that, and then also a training area, open ride area on designated trails that would be separate from the shooting area so that you don't have those conflicting uses in the area. One of the components of this, and actually in some discussion with BLM, we may need to tweak this just a little bit because there's a water tank and well area that was designated in this application. They feel like that should be listed in a separate application specifically from Payson City because that would be a Payson City facility when it's done. So we'll probably need to pull that portion out of this application and have Payson do a separate application for that. We did ask the question originally, and the reason why it's in here is could we just do it all in one application and then the county deed that area once it's determined where that well and water tank would be to the city, but BLM's come back and said, no, we'd rather have you do it as two separate applications. So other questions that you have on this application that I can try to answer?
Richard, I know we met with some of the citizens that live out near there mm-hmm. that were concerned with the orientation of the shooting range and the direction of the shooting and stuff. Could you maybe just talk a little bit what's been done to make sure that we're shooting in the appropriate direction and that there's adequate safety measures in place to keep any type of stray bullets or et cetera from potentially reaching, you know, private property?
Sure. Maybe I'll back up just a little bit before I go into that. That one of the things that has happened out there with the open shooting, there have been stray bullets that have wound up in neighboring homes and even over the hill into Genola. The area that we've looked at for the shooting range is we've talked with BLM and even had some conversations with DWR. DWR suggests that we have the shooting lanes oriented north to south. Rather than an east to west direction because of the sunlight and things like that. So what we've looked at is to tuck it right up against the hillside. If you're familiar with the road that goes up to the Payson landfill, it'll be right at the far west end of that makes a hard 90 to the left. It would be right in that area. There'd be berms that would be built 20 to 25 feet high on the sides of the lanes. Because of the nature of having the homes not too far to the east of there and also off to the north, DWR suggests that we put some baffles along the top of the range so that if you're standing at the shooting line, you don't see blue sky. You know, all you can see is the target area, and you've got baffles above you that will will stop all of the bullets. It's similar to what the Lee Case Center in Salt Lake has. So that's one of the things that's been looked at there with DWR.
Perfect. Thank you.
So the reason, a couple reasons why I asked this to be on a work session, in going through this, and it's been going on a long time.
Yep.
And I've been in and out of kind of the conversation as it's been in and out of in play. There was significant conversation about Payson City doing this application for this area, and then Utah County looking at doing a greater application on the mountain itself.
Yes.
And so as I look at it now, because the applicant name is Utah County.
Yes.
And it seems to fit with Payson. I mean, Payson's right there. Their boundaries are right next to it.
Correct.
And so a couple of concerns I have, and that is that if we're the applicant and that the land's being deeded to us, then there's a certain expectation that we're in charge of what goes on there. Mm-hmm. And my fear is that if we're in charge of what goes on there, then that also means that a majority of the money to do any improvements there will probably be looking towards us to do the majority of the money. I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with that.
Okay.
Because I think that in talking with Payson City before, they were the ones that were kind of proposing, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? We want to build an equestrian center there. We want to do the motocross and also the gun range, which I'm all for, but I was under the assumption that they were going to take the lead and that we were going to support and that they would apply necessarily to our TRCC funds, mm-hmm. During the appropriate time for support in that, which I'm more in favor of doing it that route than us being the lead and the name on the title.
Okay. Maybe I can address that in a couple of parts. The discussion of Payson City taking this portion of it was specifically when they were looking at doing the equestrian center in that area. They have backed away from that. They're looking at some other areas that are more conducive to the equestrian facilities that are off of the hillside. So you're not trying to masquerade such a large area to build an arena or things of that nature. So they've backed away from having the equestrian facilities at this site. This goes back to more what the original intent was with the shooting range and the ATV motocross track that was started, like I say, 10 or 12 years ago. It was all intended to be in the county's name at that point. So that's why the application was written the way it was. I don't think there's any, at least not from my perspective, any objection if it was in Payson City's name versus the county's name. In talking to BLM, what they look at is they look at the aggregated amount within the county boundaries, regardless of who that ownership transfers to, and they have a limit, I think it's around 6,000 acres annually that they can consider. And we're well below that, even with some others that are going on out in the Saratoga Springs area. So I think that's certainly something we could have a discussion with Payson City on. There is a substantial cost to the facilities over the coming years to build these. I think the estimated amount in here is about $2.1 million. We have not got a firm understanding of where that money would come from. There was discussion several years ago with the State Parks Division through the outdoor recreation grants that they were willing to fund a portion of it. Rocky Mountain ATV has been involved right from the start on it. They have offered to help fund a portion of it. I don't know that those amounts have ever been identified as to who would pay for what amount.
Yeah, so. And again, I for me, it's just that with our name being on there, we seem to be the driver on it, and so we're responsible for it.
I would agree with that.
We'd have to make the decisions with it, and I personally would prefer to be a participant in, not the participant driving.
Okay.
And so that's why I thought maybe we ought to have that conversation now.
Be a good time to do that. So.
Because I actually felt like from our meetings that we had down there in Payson City that was kind of that, what we were talking about.
It was, and it was the driver on that was the equestrian center being there and Payson City wanting to have the control of that site. So
yeah.
Well, I appreciate you raising that issue. And so, I mean, if I were to rephrase what you said, Richard, I mean, would the assumption be that if we were to do this and we were to apply, you're saying the funding source is unknown, but kind of the default is that the county is paying for the development of that.
Unless we
find some other source which has not yet been identified.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Where if it was under the cities, then the city would be looking for the resources,
yeah, they'd be
which
the one that
I
have
would
to find
love
it,
so. To be a part of.
And maybe just as a suggestion, maybe what we ought to look at is before this application goes in, maybe we ought to be doing an interlocal agreement with the cities or with the city and possibly with DWR, Rocky Mountain ATV, some of those as partners as well. Try to identify some of that funding, and then from there you'd know whether it's a, you know, we want it under county control or it ought to be under city control.
Yeah, because Rocky Mountain ATV, they were a big player in the city's
correct
mind.
Yes.
And so, you know, it seems like they have that natural tie with them,
yep,
anyway.
And
it would be something in which we would have to facilitate that. Anyway, I'm just, that's the reason why I thought it'd be nice to,
sure,
have this conversation.
You know, Richard, and this is just kind of a random thought, the beauty of work sessions, right? Given that this will be primarily a county youth facility, as far as I would anticipate the citizens using this will come from all over the county. I wonder if it makes sense as we look at an interlocal, if we do try and expand that and some of the funding options to Santaquin and Salem and Spanish Fork or, you know, some of those cities in the area,
yes,
where we're going to get most of the draw, I would anticipate,
right?
With kind of the north range, you know, I think you'd get more of your northern city residents there. But would it make sense to try and bring in maybe a few more people? Is that complicated? Is Payson objected to that?
I don't know if we're trying to spread it out
amongst more municipalities. Does that help us get to a dollar figure that makes more sense for this type of a project? Again, given where I see this as a real regional draw, that will hopefully attract people from outside of the county too, right? I mean, I hope that UAB and some of our neighboring counties and stuff, and if it can be, you know, I think is envisioned, it will draw significant people there. And so would something like that make sense, or is there an appetite for that?
I think it would. I think that you know, the other cities have not been part of this conversation, but I certainly think it'd be good to have that conversation with them. I think, you know, we probably ought to revisit the state parks portion and what they would be willing to put into it. And honestly, with the range, I think DWR, so that's all under the Division of Natural Resources umbrella, but I think it would be good to have a conversation with the state agencies as well and see if they'd be willing to help participate. You know, BLM's position has kind of been that they're donating the land, so they're not looking at a cash contribution on anything like that, but maybe even SITLA. You know, they have some land in the area as well, so that may be something to look at.
I would imagine then that, given Commissioner Ivey's comments, that any resources that did come from the county would be TRCC funded.
I would assume they probably would be.
And so I think it's more standard. I mean, I don't think that. I mean, so then there's a whole other issue is we can't really move forward with that until that has gone through the TTAB
correct
recommendation process. And, you know, also to both of the points that have been made, the TTAB process typically involves some sort of sponsorship and certainly at a minimum matching dollars from the cities that are involved. So.
And this is going back several years, but there was a discussion with the TTAB board 8 or 9 years ago. I couldn't tell you exactly when, but this project was discussed at that point. They were favorable to it at that point. I'm assuming the board has probably changed quite a bit since then.
I'm sure it has,
so,
and their priorities have. And,
yep,
so
and of course, the commission has all changed since that point as well. So
yeah.
So is Payson, I mean, are they on the equestrian center facility? They've just kind of written that off? I mean, into the future,
looking at a different location that's closer to the freeway, out in the flatland,
okay,
not into the topography works better for the other area that they're looking. So,
and my understanding too is they're still trying to work with UVU and the,
yes,
rodeo team, and if UVU
and
expands their campus into Payson, it would probably make sense,
yep,
to try and have that facility a little tighter to the university and the campus down,
yep,
there. It would be my thought too. So I mean, that's,
yeah, UVU is heavily involved in those discussions with Payson. So. Other questions?
I don't have any. Thanks. That's good discussion.
Sounds like we still need some more work on this.
I was just going to say. So as far as action item, we're not ready to put it on for an action, have a discussion with Payson. Would any of you like to be at the point of contact from the commission for this discussion, or I know Commissioner Lee, you've been involved with it before. Commissioner Ivey's our portfolio commissioner.
Yeah. But I wouldn't mind having that discussion with them or being part of it.
Sounds good. Thanks.
And to the extent there's any TTAB coordination, that can go through Ezra, or really just one of the board members of the Tourism Tax Advisory Board needs to get that agenda item on their meeting.
Is Dan Thomas from Rocky Mountain, is he still on that board or not? Okay. He has been in the past. So. Okay, thanks.
Thanks. Okay, we'll move to work session item number 3, a presentation on the Bonneville Shoreline Trail Advancement Act.
Hi. Thank you for having me here today, commissioners. It's nice to be here. Back in April, let me just back up. My name's Sarah Bennett. I am executive director of Trails Utah. We're about 5 years old now, and we are an advocacy and facilitation organization. So we're working with lots of public land managers, county government, municipalities, to create partnerships, leverage monies, work a lot with track funds, work a lot with state parks and the RTP funds to raise money to build trails that are environmentally sustainable and are enjoyable to use. We have been involved in a lot of planning processes over the years, and I have individually, just as a trails advocate. And back in 2016, you may have heard about the Mountain Accord process in Salt Lake County. That was spearheaded by the Salt Lake City mayor at the time, Ralph Becker. It ended up getting federal funding to the tune of about $500,000. And that was a pretty thorough process. It was about 3 years of meetings with 4 different advisory groups, and one was recreation, economy, environment, and transportation. And the thing that really pushed that effort forward were conflicts about transportation in the Central Wasatch, in the heavily visited Little Big Mill Creek canyons. That got rolling, and recreation was a big part of that. And from the very outset, there was a concern for the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, which is arguably the most important regional trail in northern Utah. And there's about 75 miles of that trail that's been identified in future alignments and existing alignments here in Utah County. At build out, that trail will someday approach several hundred miles all the way from the border with Idaho down past Nebo. So it's really, it's a big, ambitious vision for a trail, and it's really caught on. There's municipalities and counties all along the Wasatch Front that are now sort of using the Bonneville Shoreline Trail concept as the central organizing feature of their open space and trails programs. It's north to south running, so neighborhoods all along can tie into that trail. Very, very important recreational, outdoor recreation concept. So I have some maps, and the letter that I did send to you back in April when we were all sliding into the pandemic. I don't know if
you can go ahead. Yeah.
As long as you're 6 feet away, right?
Yeah. My arms are a little longer. So here's the letter that I initially.
I was hoping you'd make paper airplanes. Throw it up there, right?
So it talks a little bit about the history of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. But I did not go in. I just wanted to give you a little bit of background about how this bill evolved. The outcome of Mountain Accord was legislation that was penned and introduced in 2016 that was called the Central Wasatch National Conservation and Recreation Act. It was a first go. That act includes 8,000 acres of new wilderness. It includes transportation improvements in the Central Wasatch, specifically to the ski areas. And it also included this piece about the trail where we are asking to move a wilderness boundary to accommodate the trail, create a public lands buffer that can be consistently managed by the Forest Service and other public land managers and can provide the opportunity for shared use on the trail. Right now we have a situation in Salt Lake County where the Mount Olympus wilderness area, the Lone Peak wilderness area, and there's one other, that the points, the right angles, come down so close to roads and private property that it's prohibitive to doing any kind of work on the trails with machinery. Any kind of machines are not allowed in wilderness. And it also prohibits mountain bikes. And mountain biking is one of the most popular sports in the outdoor recreation sort of universe right now. And so there's a huge push to make some of these trails that are so close to where we live, where we access open space, to make them shared use. And I know from interfacing with some of the trails advocates here in Utah County that you guys are having some of the same issues at your boundaries. If you look at that map, the area that is just adjacent to Lambert Park there, which is the 59 acres, that is a proposed alignment. So everything in pink are areas that are currently wilderness that we are seeking to retract the boundary to the trail itself. So that would allow for, again, shared use of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, especially in areas that are settled and active with especially Utah high school mountain biking teams, of which there are, I think Utah County, there's over 1,000 kids now that now participate in high school mountain biking teams. So having these trails be open to mountain bikes is really important. It's so important that the national, actually they're an international organization, IMBA, International Mountain Biking Association, they really took up the cause of the piece of the Central Wasatch Bill that spoke to trails. The rest of the bill is stalled for a while. The transportation piece is so complex. There's an EIS currently going forward. That's going to be another, I think, 18 months of gathering information and doing studies. That's another $2 million study. That whole bill, that whole package is so much about transportation and this big wilderness piece that we really saw the opportunity, IMBA, Trails Utah, other trails advocates, where we had a chance to move this forward independently. And Representative John Curtis has heard us, and he's taken on this bill, the Bonneville Shoreline Trail Advancement Act. And we're really excited to have him as our sponsor. He grew up in Olympus Cove in Salt Lake County. He's seen the issues with access to open space and needing to sort of meet the needs, the growing interest that there is in trails and in open space and trail-based activities.
And so what does the bill do?
So the bill would retract the wilderness boundaries in the Lone Peak Wilderness in Utah County. In Salt Lake County, it would also do that, and Cache County is also now on board since I've written you this letter. There's a section of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail in the Wellsville Mountains, so on the west side of the Cache Valley, that is also going to be included in this bill. So now it's Cache, Salt Lake, and Utah counties. So it would adjust wilderness boundaries in those three counties to achieve, one, a shared use, that's mountain bike friendly trail, and two, create a more consistent framework for managing these open spaces that are getting more and more and more use. I've reached out specifically to Troy Stout, Mayor Stout, up in Alpine. Mm-hmm. They have big concerns up there about the shooting and other types of activities that are currently going on Forest Service wilderness property that they've been unable to get a handle on, and the Forest Service just simply doesn't have the resources. And so taking that little corner out of wilderness, putting it into a more general Forest Service status, is going to sort of open up the Forest Service ability to work with the city of Alpine and Utah County, if it comes to that, to manage some of the illegal shooting and dumping and things that are going on up there right now.
Can I ask you a bunch of questions?
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know if you got the email that I sent back on this or if it went to John Curtis's office. I don't know which one.
Must have gone to John Curtis's office.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I just replied back. And my hope is it sounds like we're going to be friends. I'm hoping that's the case, but I have some real hesitation on some things when I, okay, especially when we're talking about wilderness and wilderness areas.
Mm-hmm.
I am all for mixed use and looking at ways in which we can appropriately manage. When I look at this map, though, I think you're thinking too small.
Uh-huh.
Because one of the problems that we have is wildland interface.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to have a buffer. And the wilderness areas, when they come right down to our borders like mm-hmm. this and right down to backyards, they create tremendous problems for us.
Yeah.
And so we've got to have a buffer. And I think the buffer's got to be significant enough because you can't take any mechanized equipment onto this property up here and all of a sudden the fire starts and we are in crazy time.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do anything.
Right.
And so I see this and I see 14 acres here and 2 acres there. I think if we're going to go after this, we need to go after this in a bigger way.
Okay.
for management and try to find buffer zones that make sense and get our wildland fire people on board to say if a fire starts down below or if the fire starts from a lightning strike up above and it comes down, we have a protective zone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to the trails, the riding, I'm all for that. I think that's great and I'd be on board and clap about that. But I really would like us to look at this map and say, that 59 acres, I don't know how far that is across. You know, is that, you know, that 14 acres, is that, that's going down there, is that 15 feet, 20 feet, 50 feet?
Generally, what we're doing with the buffer is that it's 100 feet from the center of the trail alignment.
So that fort, so 100 feet?
So 100 feet.
And so if we talked with our wildland fire people, they would say a good defensible, because mm-hmm. then if it's defensible for us, we can actually get up there and manage that. We can get in there with our chainsaws and everything and manage that space.
Yep.
So that if something comes either direction, we've got a managed area in which we can manage that to either go up or down.
And trails do allow
they're fantastic
much
for
quicker
yeah.
access to wildland fire. And actually, I sit on Salt Lake City's Wildland Fire Advisory Group because of all the trail projects that I'm involved with. So they're really actively using trails as a part of their response plan.
So you could get me on board if we just expanded this out and said, you know, a defensible space according to wildland fires is 100 yards. I don't know what it is. They would determine that, and meaning that maybe we have multiple barricades as it coming through, and then the ability to say with the Forest Service, you know, that not necessarily they have to go do all the work. I mean, we have the ability to go up there and do some work too and build defensible space,
mm-hmm.
you know, for that. Because we've had fires rip through here all
right.
the time, it seems
right.
like. You know, there's always something going on. It'd be nice to be able to have a boundary in there so that we can protect both ways with it.
Yes, and, you know, that's always a consideration in these situations where you have wilderness coming right down to the boundary, again, with private property, is that we're really limited on what kind of machinery and tools and things we can use
yeah.
to address fire and trail maintenance, trail construction, things
like
that.
I know you're thinking just along the trail because the trail mm-hmm. does cut back down into the city property and so forth, but I'm thinking along this whole boundary there is, if we're going after it with the bill, let's go after it
okay.
and see if we can find a defensible space all the way along the whole thing.
So perhaps reaching out to state fire and forestry, state lands, working with them, seeing what they would recommend in terms of a setback or, I'm going to reach out to you and make some connections there so we can have that discussion.
I mean, even if we had the graze part of that and put fences up there, those things are just phenomenal for knocking down, you know, fires. And when they come through, and you'd be amazed if we had that in this area, that fire that went ripping up through there probably would have hit that defensible space and then stopped before it jumped over into the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And then we have all the chaos that goes on after.
Right. Okay.
So I do have a question for you. So out of my own curiosity, I have a wonderful little app, Trail Forks, which shows me where I should go mountain
biking. That's a good one. It's the best.
A little pitch for it. Yeah. I typically am in Payson Canyon. In the Four Bay area, most of the trail systems down there are maintained by volunteers. I was looking in this particular area off the Lone Peak Wilderness, where you've got your 59 acres into wilderness. And according to this, there's quite an extensive system of mountain biking trail that runs off the Lambert Park parking area and around there. Do we know if those are, who maintains those? Are those city maintained? Are they cooperatively maintained? And is there an effort to work with organizations that are doing those trails, for maintenance on these? Or is it going to be completely run by the Forest Service, or how are we going, the county picks up maintenance on them. How are we looking I'd be supportive of putting some type of trail system through there. It would make sense to connect it back into this other very extensive system, but I'd be curious about maintenance of the trail, and are we working with whatever organizations are running the current mountain biking trails in that region?
I know that Alpine City Mayor Stout has really good working knowledge of the Lambert Park area trails. I also am aware that there's a group down this way, and I'm forgetting their name, that does perform routine maintenance on the trails down there. But so far, I'm not aware of any budget that has been set aside either by the city of Alpine or here in Utah County for trail maintenance.
Okay.
And I don't know, I've been up there riding in Lambert Park trails, and I'm not sure if this pink area directly adjacent to it would add new trail, right? This is more like where you were saying, it's more where sometimes people shoot and things like that. There's not existing biking trails.
Yeah, there's
non-existing
trails. According to this map, there's not.
Yeah, no existing trail. We have been working with the district ranger in this area, and he gave this alignment the thumbs up. And actually, I have to say that the chairman of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail Committee, who couldn't be here today, otherwise he would give you more background on that alignment. But he has been down here, and he's walked all over here and GPSed this alignment. It's what he thought was the most buildable, most reasonable alignment through here. And then he got a hold of Russ at the Forest Service, and Russ confirmed that would be a workable alignment for a trail through there.
And so this bill, is this really, because this is federal land, it's just the federal government modifying its own boundaries?
Exactly.
So there's no compensation. I do see some notes about some private land owners. What are those considerations?
Working with private property owners is always a crapshoot. You're never quite sure how they're going to come down. We've had really great success in a couple of our projects working with private property owners who are happy to provide easements, formal easements or informal easements. It's just a matter of time and having someone on the ground that can do that outreach to the private property owners.
So when you say that, like, who does the Does this bill, starting from at least one point, does this bill do anything as it relates to private property?
No, it does nothing.
So once this bill were to pass, right, mm-hmm. and that can do some boundary adjustment, then you're just saying, as a trail advocate, mm-hmm. at that point, you would also want to focus on getting these boundaries through private property.
Somehow. Yeah, those alignments. And maybe there is a way, I think there is an informal alignment. There's quite a bit of that long 14-acre piece that does exist and is locally referred to by mountain bikers as the Wilderness Trail. So, people are aware that it's actually in wilderness. Whether any of that exists across those private parcels, I'm not sure. Actually, I'm on my way over there to go ride up in this area and see what I can see.
And then what are the color coding on this map?
The blue exists. I'm certain of that. Some of the red exists, but some of the red does not. So John created this map and he couldn't be here today. His wife is terminally ill. He could not come today.
Sorry to hear that.
But I can certainly get more detail on this map to you with that information.
Okay. Well, I appreciate this initial background. I don't have any additional questions. Sounds like you have some follow-up with Commissioner Lee's suggestions.
Yeah,
appreciate you coming and presenting this.
Thank you. Thanks for hearing me.
Good stuff. Thank you.
And I'd just like to emphasize again that this bill is about the trail. I mean, addressing wildland fire concerns has definitely bubbled up in a lot of conversations. So I'll get on that and get back to you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. We'll now move to a discussion on 2020 Municipal Recreation Grant Program.
Hi, Ezra Nair with the Utah County Commission Office. So before getting to the letter, I kind of wanted to provide some background and a little bit of information on what got us to this point. So the Tourism Tax Advisory Board for the first time has recommended a slight reduction in funding to this account. And so I wasn't able to just go forward and just send out the rec grants as they have been in previous years without some discussion with the commission first. Obviously that amount can be adjusted to whatever you guys feel necessary. And then I also wanted to bring up some potential ideas for this program going forward as well. But to discuss as well, with our TRCC and our TRT accounts, the results of COVID-19 on both of those accounts has been quite significant, a lot more on the TRT. The TRCC is more of an indirect exposure that we have there. A good portion of the Convention Center bond payment, we've been able to use a third of the TRT to pay for that bond payment. With the reduction in TRT, however, currently state law doesn't allow for more than a third of that to be a third of what we collect in that year to be used towards that convention center. And so that adds basically a little under $1.5 million exposure to our TRCC fund. And that's regardless of a reduction in projected revenue as well for that account. So that's just something to be mindful of as we make these decisions with the TRCC. Also with the Convention Center, we subsidize some of the operating and maintenance for that building from our TRCC. And because they're not bringing in any revenue this year, the exposure there is a lot greater than normally we pay about close to $400,000 for that operating maintenance. That's expected to be much higher this year. So just a couple things to keep in mind as we look to what amount we want to set aside for the funds for the recreation grants. Two main ideas I wanted to bring forward is allowing cities this year to roll forward their account, their amount, regardless of size. Most of the time, we require them to spend it within the year. Allowing them to roll it forward would help us to recover in our TRCC account a little bit before that money actually gets spent. So that would be both an advantage to them and one to us as well. And then also a consideration would be to potentially exclude Provo from this recreation grant amount, since we do have so many county-wide projects that directly benefit Provo a little bit more when the projects are stationed in Provo. I think this small dollar amount that we normally allocate them kind of pales in comparison to the millions of dollars that we put in for other projects to Provo. And so that might be something to consider as well. But I just wanted to get each of your feedback on that so we can make a decision going forward.
So the as I understand it, the lesser amount from the 300,000 to the 261 mm-hmm. was basically a mechanism of how they voted and how they ranked. Because they went down through and did a ranking process and then put dollar amounts to it. And by doing that, the formulas kind of got flipped a little bit in there, meaning that in the past, we basically just said those grants was fully funded. There was no real ranking in it. Mm-hmm. And so it's I don't think there was a deliberate attempt necessarily to cut those back. I think it was just on the basis and talking with John, how they allocated it and said, well, let's fund this, let's do that. And so it turned out, based on rankings, that there was a necessarily reduction in there. Anyway, that one's just kind of a side note to it, because I do think that since we're all taking a certain amount of cut, that should be on the table for consideration. There's no doubt about that. Yep. On what can be done. In the past, with Provo City, there has been times in which we didn't give them, you know, their rec grant based on what was going on there. I think theirs is about $68,000. I think is what they get on a rec grant basis.
Roughly 50,
right around there.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's an interesting. Conversation to say we're funding the airport, you know, and so there's $4.5 million there. I just wonder if that would be consistent with Lehigh when we give a couple million dollars up there for, you know, their Butterfield biospheres, and you know, I don't know how we balance that is what I'm saying, because there are going to be big projects, and thank goodness we've had the opportunity to fund big projects. And so I don't know if big projects necessarily mean that in the next year we don't do some of their municipal grants.
So
just some thoughts.
I mean, I don't understand why we do rec grants. I don't really understand the history of it. I don't think that the currently constituted Tourism Tax Advisory Board actually consciously approved this. I think it was something that was they didn't totally understand, and maybe it was. You know, as you're aware, the shaping of that agenda and the way that they prioritize projects is something the three of us have been working on to be more transparent and give clearer guidance, because we've had issues like this in the past. Like you're saying, Commissioner Lee, is it clear whether this was approved for 260 or do they mean for it to be 300? We're trying to make that more clear of a process. And so I think this last ranking system was still kind of partially new, partially legacy of the old system. And so I'm comfortable moving forward in some way, but I really don't know, as we start to review this next year, whether there will be rec grants. For the very same point that Commissioner Lee, you're saying, we should be doing big projects that influence the entire county. To give each city $5,000 so they can subsidize their own park and rec program, I think that almost sends the wrong message to what we want happen with these dollars. What we want to have happen with these dollars is each of the cities and the county spend it in meaningful recreational opportunities that can enhance the opportunities available to all of county residents. And so personally, I have real questions about this going forward. That being said, it was approved for this year. I think you kind of have to give people notice about what we want to do. And so I'm fine approving it on the same basis as we've done it in the past. and maybe it doesn't have to go out with any notice. I don't think anyone really listens to these work sessions, but in some way that's providing public notice that I don't know if this is going to continue in the future. But I would hate to leave a city hanging if they kind of felt like it was coming
this year.
Part of,
and you know, to clarify, from what I understand with the rec grants, is that there is significant pushback at times by different cities that they don't see anything from this grant. And I mean, from this pot of money.
Right.
And so I think there was an attempt to say, you know what, we're going to give something every year to all the cities in the county. And it's going to be disproportional at times. And, you know, we've heard the arguments back and forth. We generate more than this one does. Therefore, we need more than this one does. And, yeah, there's some cities that they probably don't hardly generate anything. We give them more than what they generate. But I think that was the intent. The intent was to see if, you know, okay, everyone's kind of a part of it. Let's give you something a little bit here and there to kind of move along. And I actually feel comfortable with that. It's a $300,000. That's a lot of money. It's not like it's just nothing, but still, I think it's something to the cities. And to some cities, it's a big deal. I mean, that $10,000 they get is a big deal to them, because they kind of count on that every year. Like I'm sure Richard does, you know, for his department. And I don't remember in the rankings if your rankings went down and the funding was less or not. It probably was, if, according to the rankings that we have now. But, you know, we always kind of held those as this is what this fund kind of does. And Richard's department's one of those that we held and said, you know, the funding goes that way. So I feel comfortable that way. Obviously, it's for discussion.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm certainly open to looking at some type of modification to it. I do have reservations given the historical nature of this, and cities have, you know, probably planned on this to all of a sudden pull the rug out from them. Unless there is an extenuating circumstance where that fund was so low that we just didn't simply have the money for it, then, you know, that's a reality they have to deal with just like we would. But I think if we can identify the funding for this year, it probably makes sense to kind of continue with it as we've historically done with the notification. And I would be fine, you know, if we got together and somehow formalized some type of a notification to send out to the cities that we're revamping the recreational grant program and tried to figure out how it makes the most sense to modernize it, if you will, moving forward. I think that's, you know, probably a wise thing to do. Because, you know, I agree with you, Commissioner Lee. Like, how do we, and this is opens up a whole can of worms, but it's why I have problems with this whole funding anyway, because we inherently have to pick. and like, I think you brought up a great example of the butterfly biosphere in Lehigh and the airport in Provo. Very, very large projects, but in some regards, very, very different projects, right? Because Butterfly Biosphere goes to Thanksgiving Point, mm-hmm. not necessarily Lehigh, whereas the airport does go to Provo, a government entity that benefits the region. So they just get messy.
Yeah.
It's why I think we need to continue to tighten down our requirements and how we're ranking these and the role of the advisory board and how they're putting them forward. But I'm for this year, if the funding is there, I'm pretty hesitant to just pull the rug out from under it.
Okay.
Even if it's a reduced amount to them as a result of a decrease in funding, I think that's probably a little more fair to the cities.
And I agree. The interesting thing about those examples for me is that, you know, our museums in Lehigh and our airport in Provo, especially now if they add all of the additional gates and the additional flights, those are two examples that nobody can question that people all over the county are benefiting from, and even outside of the county. And I think that is the ultimate thing that we need to make sure that this account is doing. If we were to just, for example, an expansion of this rec grant program where you're just distributing so that cities can, I mean, cities need to fund their own parks and recs programs with their own tax base, right, and manage that on their own. And so I don't think that that's really the purpose of this funding. That doesn't mean I'm opposed to, like you're saying, on a limited basis doing it, but I for me, I've always viewed those dollars as helping to facilitate regionally significant projects that wouldn't otherwise happen.
Yeah.
Right. Which you, there's another good one this year, Bridal Veil Falls. You know, some of our county parks. We've done Utah Lake specific projects this year that did benefit particular cities. But you know that if there's a park along the lake or a marina at the lake, people from all over are going to use it. So I continue to think that that's the priority for these dollars. So maybe it sounds like the direction we're getting is this year, let's go ahead and do the same amount as last year and send out the notification. Personally, I might think that there should be a notification in there that says something to the effect of, you know, the Tourism Tax Advisory Board, you know, the long-term future of this program is in question,
right,
and it has to be reevaluated by under the new criteria established by the Tourism Tax Advisory Board. So, you know, don't necessarily count on it in future years. We can figure out how to word that. Right. But that here's the amount for this year. And I don't know, because we're talking about that, I don't know if it makes sense to say that it can be rolled forward. This is another challenge. And I speak to this maybe a little bit more because I know that Ezra ends up cutting some of these checks a lot. It is the tail on some of these decisions can be very hard to administer, right? I mean, we just had Richard Nielsen up here in the last agenda item saying that 6 years ago the TAB recommended a project and now he didn't necessarily feel like it needed to go back. And he didn't say that, but that's kind of what we deal with. And so I do think we need to have some hard deadlines so that we don't just, you know, who knows, 3 years, there's a new commissioner in and they send an invoice to the office and say,
it's a hard one. The tail on this thing drives me nuts. That's why I'm glad you got it. Because I mean, we put in there, it's supposed to be specific for projects, but you get a receipt back. And how do you verify that it was on that project? That all you have is, that would drive me crazy. I'll just tell you right now. I don't know how, over the years, we've never had to touch it in my office, and I've been glad, actually, to tell you the truth.
No, it's definitely a
But, you know, there's another part to it, too, that is kind of an interesting one, because we get asked every year, hey, Deneen, what is that? What's the grant that, not the grant, but the tax that they put out there for Rex and what's it called? It's there's two of them.
Yeah, so you have like usually a care tax or a wrap or a
care
tax.
And wrap taxes, right? And so they usually ask us if we're going to put out a wrap tax, if we're going to do one on our own. We have said so far no, because we already have the TRCC funds, and it might be in some of the conversations if you're putting a care tax out there or a wrap tax out there. Maybe that disqualifies you for some of this other funding because it's for kind of similar stuff.
Right. And to me, that's, you know what I mean? I think that makes a ton of sense if we incorporate that into the discussion, right? If a municipality has a wrap tax, I mean, they're getting twice for the same purpose.
Oh, and just to clarify, I think what you're maybe, if they have that just from this amount we're talking about,
yeah,
the rec grant amount.
From the rec grant. Why should you get I think the question to that municipality would be, why should you get a rec grant when you already have a wrap tax?
Right.
Care tax. Right.
These now, because on the two. But on the flip
and
side,
I think that's a valid question, and I'd love to hear the justification, you know, from a city and hear them try and make their case for why that should occur.
It's a fair point. Some of the larger recipients do have that tax.
Right.
I think nobody was referring to the entire amount, to make that argument, sometimes it's good that they have that, right? Because we do have the principle that the Tourism Tax Advisory Board has established that matching funds are important for whatever local entity. So by enacting those local taxes, that helps them be able to match to help support additional kind of significant regional projects.
Yeah, so. And for clarification, I'm not necessarily advocating one way or another on that, but I think it's got to be part of the equation that we have that, you know, understanding of, does it make sense to fund cities that already have that with this? Does it make sense to even continue this? You know, what's the true reach and benefit of it? And I think if we include in this year's funding allocation notification that don't count on this for next year, we're going through a complete process, then they can start to formulate answers to those types of questions, and,
right.
and we can have those conversations.
Okay. Does that give you the direction that you need?
I think so. One note for the TRT fund. I know Nate, our lobbyist, is working hard to get some allowances for us to use our bond payment in excess of that one-third, and I believe that will be on for the next special session. So that's reassuring for our TRCC fund, but it's still kind of a gray area. So,
okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ezra.
The other comment, just as we move forward, the idea of excluding a particular city, I'm okay. I'm not okay with that now, and I think none of us are giving you that direction to send that out. I think that could be on a one-by-one basis while we're negotiating a new grant. You know, for example, one of the cities has a new sports facility that has been approved. I think you could address that as you're entering into that grant agreement, yeah. if we wanted to.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. That actually concludes our meeting. The final work session item, we can strike.
Oh, the mosquito one.
It's not needed any longer. So.
Motion to strike regular agenda item number 5.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to strike number 5. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. I take a final motion.
Do we need public comments?
Do we need to do that?
It's on the agenda.
Generally we do.
Do we have any general public comment?
We're looking at you.
not to put you on the spot, right?
Here's your chance.
Thank you.
Okay. Glad you pointed that out so we don't ask you for public comment every time you come.
Does Francisco really love county politics?
Well, we hope you do. Is this it? Fantastic. Well, I would go ahead and move to adjourn it.
Second.
Motion and second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 3-0.